Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
In sports, there's winning and losing and getting injured. That's why there's Dr. Clapper.
Dr. Robert Clapper is the head of orthopedic surgery at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center.
It's Saturday morning, and it's time for Dr. Clapper.
Silence is golden when you can't think of a good answer.
This is the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai on ESPN LA 710 and the ESPN app.
Hey, Dr. Clapper.
How are you?
Yes, Doc, I love your show.
Thank you.
Now, here he is, Dr. Robert Clapper.
Good morning, Los Angeles, and welcome to another edition of the Weekend Warrior Show. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai for 31 years. Wow. I am so excited for my guest today. He's calling in from Atlanta. He's my favorite sports announcer for NCAA football. His name is Brad Nessler. I've been listening to him call games for years, but this year, he really outdid himself. This year, we saw LSU and their quarterback, Joe Burrow, break every record a player could possibly break. He won everything, SEC championship, Heisman Trophy, and the national championship. I saw every game, but more importantly, I heard Brad Nessler call so many of the games, and I really studied how he used his voice as an instrument. Just like my tools in surgery, Brad Nessler used his voice. The speed, the tempo, the highs, the lows, when to allow crowd noise, storytelling. He does it all to such a level of expertise, and it made me think all week, where in art, where in sports, where in surgery do we see the voice as an instrument or a tool? Well, in art, nobody mastered the pace, the tempo, the phrasing of his voice better than Italian tenor Luciano Pavarotti. You don't have to understand Italian to feel the power in his voice. And in a minute, you're going to hear how he fought with his dad, who is also a tenor, about technique. Nowhere near the notoriety of his son, but their battles were about this technique. And in sports growing up, nobody in my lifetime had more powerful a voice in sports than Jim McKay, the host of ABC Wide World of Sports, their very first announcer. Let me tell you something. ESPN would never exist if Wide World of Sports was not created. And if it wasn't for Jim McKay, there'd be no Wide World of Sports. He used his voice to tell stories that made you want to see the demolition derby car driver or that diver in Acapulco. The storytelling about their lives is what brought you in, and his excitement, really for the person, for the athlete, is what revolutionized the whole idea of announcing in sport, using his voice as an instrument to tell stories. And in surgery, I was blessed to spend a fellowship year with the great Dr. Robert Curlin of Curlin Job. And he really taught me a lot about how to use your voice as an instrument. He's one of the Mount Rushmore guys who created the very idea of sports medicine. Clappervision, we got to talk about the last dance, because one of the most significant injuries, not to Michael Jordan, but to Scottie Pippen. What kind of foot surgery did he have that led to this whole story about him staying out during the championship run? We'll get into that foot surgery to his second toe and what exactly is a damage to the volar plate of his second toe that Dr. William Hamilton, who I knew very well in New York, operated on him and Charles Oakley. I'll give you a hint. It involves a hot dog and a bun. That'll be the Clapper Vision for Scottie Pippen's injury. But let's get right into it. Rebecca, let's let everybody hear what it's like Well, first let's listen to Brad Nessler. So we'll just test the waters so that you'll hear why I'm so impressed at how he changes the height of his voice, the pacing, the crowd noise, the storytelling. Let's do the first of the two Brad Nesslers calling, first of a football game, Tennessee against Florida, and then a basketball game. Let's do the football game first.
In trouble in the backfield, wants to throw now, and he's going to go deep. And I mean deep, and I mean touchdown, Florida! Tyree Cleveland in a miracle finish. A Hail Mary that's full of grace for the Gators.
Ugh, I love it. Now let's hear a basketball game, NCAA Final Four, I should say March Madness, Michigan State versus Houston. Oh, my. Listen again carefully. This is not an accident. This is an artist at work, high, low, allowing the crowd noise, storytelling. Oh, I just love it. Brad Nessler. Let's listen to this basketball game.
He rifles it right in front of us to Abdul-Rahman at midcourt. Extra pass. Has won it for the Wolverines.
There's such an art. It's such a craft. It's just beautiful to listen to. Let's listen. Again, we don't speak a lick of Italian, you and me. Kobe did, but not you and me. Listen to Luciano Pavarotti recital. We'll do one and two. Here's the climax of Nessun Dorme. Okay, only on this show will we compare Pavarotti to a Tennessee-Florida game. But trust me, that's what's going on. Let's listen to Pavarotti talking about this craft, this art of using your voice as an instrument. Let's go to Pavarotti's sound bites. Let's start with number 5 to 10.
In a choral, there is always the old people. Then when they see a young kid come in, they always think that he's an idiot. Then he cannot sing. He cannot sing appropriately. He cannot do a certain thing different than what they always have done. A voice alone is not enough. For example, he did not have ambition. He did not have courage to go in front of the audience face to face and say,
this is
yeah,
talking about his dad.
I am a tenor. I would like to sing. I want to sing. That my father was unable to say. I think I was a little like him at the beginning, but Paula, who was a tenor already, he really gave me the pushing with example.
Paula was his
teacher. Every day, I remember for 6 months, consecutive months, I just make vocalize, E-U-O-I, and nothing other than that, just to open this joint, because I was a little close.
TMJ, Julie.
I remember very well. Every time it was, for example, explaining the cover sound, the suoni di passaggio, I always try, and of course I crack, and I say, I cannot do it. And he says, listen. And he make the sound. And he says, if I do this, then I am a person. You can do this. You are an animal. I always remember that. Of course, he was joking because
this is Paula talking.
Voice is one question, but you must have musicality. You must have rhythmicality, intelligence, memory. To make a complete artist, you have so many, many, many things. Together, you make a great singer.
This is Giuseppe Di Stefano. And this is the tenor who made me fight with my father. Because when he come out, I say to him, Papa, I like this more. I don't want to take Gigli in less consideration. My father was a super fanatic of Gigli, but I like this young man more because he's giving me a new message. With a beautiful voice, he's going to try to stay close to the truth. And he make open sound and they excite me.
Di Stefano had the exceptional interpretive skills of a great creative artist, and I believe Luciano learned a lot from him. But he is shrewd enough not to follow his technical path, because Di Stefano's technique was not good. Not good because, to put it technically, he used to open the notes of the passaggio when they need to be more focused. The passaggio are the notes between the mid and high range where the tenor needs to sing the vowels a little darker. Di Stefano sings a little bit. A classical tenor sings rounder and softer and tires the voice less.
I cannot wait to talk to Brad Nessler about who inspired him and just the whole craft, the technical aspects. Raising the voice, lowering the voice, letting the crowd noise in. What about in sports? The great inspiration from ABC Wide World of Sports, Jim McKay. Let's listen to the story of Jim McKay and Wide World of Sports, 1-8.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat.
That's Jim McKay talking.
The human drama of athletic competition. This is ABC's Wide World of Sports.
Bruno, I said, Jim, we're going to put on a summer replacement show of 20 weeks. And he said it'll involve a number of different sports. And I think I should tell you it will involve a certain amount of travel.
Wide World of Sports, since it didn't have the great effect, was an abject lesson in great storytelling.
This is Don Ohlmeyer.
You had to find out what was
one of the
interesting and would connect with an audience when you were doing things people never heard of before.
Good afternoon. This is Jim McKay reporting to you from the Eiffel Tower in Paris. From four men, experienced world-class mountain climbers, carefully selected, are going to attempt to climb this tower, armed only with their bare hands and their courage.
Jim understood what that show was about. And that show wasn't just about going to a rugby game and announcing the rugby game. So you're introducing new sports, new people, new countries, new cultures.
We're behind the Iron Curtain. And here on Paris Street are the people of Prague, as curious about us, apparently, as we are about them.
Jim McKay took sports events further down the road toward the real world and how people lived than other people had been brave enough to do before.
He had an innate ability to seek out the drama that existed in a sporting event and really make a memorable story out of it.
This young man is Manuel Garcia. Today you're going to see him perform one of the world's most daring athletic feats, leaping from a cliff into the swirling waters of the Pacific Ocean.
It's not the world record that counts. It's who sets the world record and how much do I know about him or her, and do I admire them or not admire them.
The demolition derby from Islip, Long Island, one of the great events in history. As absurd as it all sounds, cars crashing into each other. Jim made you feel for the guy who was in the old jalopy, was about to barrel in backwards into another jalopy.
When the first British Open golf tournament was played, Abraham Lincoln was the President of the United States. And yet there are many with the temerity and with the confidence to say that this British Open, the 1962 Open, is the greatest of them all.
Jim loved doing golf. He loved the sense of history of golf. He loved the sense of fair play, that you were your own referee.
Now Arnold Palmer, about a 20-footer. Hello?
And he made it! Putts on the final hole as Arnold Palmer breaks the record for the British Open by two shots with a total of 276.
There's no doubt in my mind that if Rune Arledge had not had Jim McKay, as great an idea as Wide World of Sports was, it would not have worked, because it was McKay's ability to tell the stories of the participants, make them come to life.
That's Don Ohmeyer, Dick Ebersol, Jim Lampley, Al Michaels, talking about the gift of storytelling, of pacing, raising your voice, lowering your voice, letting the crowd noise in. It's a gift. It's an art, but you got to work at it, just like Pavarotti in opera, Jim McKay in sports, and my guest coming up now, the great Brad Nessler. I cannot wait to talk about the art of using your voice as an instrument. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show presented by Cedar Sinai on ESPN LA 710 and the ESPN app.
In trouble in the backfield, wants to throw now, and he's going to go deep. And I mean deep, and I mean
if that don't get your blood pressure up, nothing will. And I'm joined by the man who made that call, the great Brad Nessler. Brad, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, Doc, how are you today?
Oh, I'm just loving trying to appreciate the work that goes in to make it look easy. And you and I know it ain't easy. I'm so blessed. You know, I got excited to talk to Dick Butkus on the show and Isaiah Thomas and some of the great doctors in our time. I'm so excited to talk to you because Michelangelo's dead 500 years. I feel like I'm talking to Michelangelo.
Right? Oh, that's too kind. Hey, I just went to Italy last year for the first time, and I know you're a sculptor and all of that, and I've seen some of your stuff, which is fantastic. But
thank you.
You know,
thank you.
Michelangelo, I was thinking, you know, how can one guy be so talented in so many different venues, you know,
right.
A painter, a sculptor, and a lot of people don't, you know, the inventions. And I don't know how the guy had enough time to do all of it. It's unbelievable when you have a chance to go to Italy and see all that stuff. It's remarkable.
But those are the people that inspire us, you know, that we're not doing enough and to suck the juice out of every single day. I don't think there's any greater compliment that you can pay a person than say, whether you're an electrician, a plumber, a surgeon, or an announcer, than saying you're an artist, right? It's the highest compliment you can give someone.
It is. Kobe. It truly is. And, you know, I don't think of my job as a job. I think of it as a craft, I guess. So that's
right.
Sort of the same thing. But, you know, you try
tell to, us a,
you try to
tell
get
us, Brad.
Every time, and it, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out that way.
Tell us a little bit about the beginning. Your dad, what did he do for a living? You grew up in Minnesota.
Right.
When was the moment when Cupid shot an arrow in your heart? What were you watching that said, nope, this is what I want to do? Was it Kurt Gowdy, Pat Summerall? Who was it?
Oh, man, you're getting the guys. It was probably Ray Scott who preceded Pat Summerall and taught Pat how to do play-by-play. You know, back in the day when I was, you know, 12 or 13, whatever, you know, the Packers were the most dominant team, and the number one announced team basically followed the Packers around, and it was Ray Scott. And I just was marveled at the way Ray did, and he was, you know, a minimalist. He didn't need to say a lot. He would just say star, dollar, touchdown, you know. I mean, that's all he had to say, you know, and I just was riveted by the way he did that. And my dad, who owned a trucking business, was a drove truck his whole life, and so did my brother, and my nephew does now. You know, I said, Dad, listen, I think I know what I'm going to do when I grow up, if I ever grow up. And, he said, what? And I said, I'm going to be a sportscaster. And, you know, he sort of laughed at me, and so did my mom. And my dad said, listen, son, he said, there's this new thing just coming out right now called computers. So that ages me pretty well because that was a new thing at the time. Why don't you get into computers? I said, Dad, I that's not what I'm going to do. And wow. He said, well, how are you going to, if you're a sportscaster, are you going to make any money? And I said, I don't know, we'll see. And, you know, wow. So in subsequent years, he made it long enough to see me my first stint at CBS in 90, I guess, before he passed away. So by the time I got to that point, he was like, well, I guess he did what he was said he was going to do.
Oh, that's fantastic. You know, I remember I've invented a lot of instruments. I have a lot of patents on tools used all over the world. And I remember bringing my dad to the orthopedic convention where surgeons from all over the world were just loving these tools that I came up with. And I snuck him into the convention. I got him a badge. And he looked at me and he said, Robbie, how did you come up with all of these things? And I said, you taught me that. He goes, me? I'm a carpenter. How could I teach you this?
Right.
I said, I remember the day when you brought the Milwaukee Sawzall home, and it changed your life. And he looks at me like, what does the Milwaukee Sawzall have to do with orthopedic surgery? I said, everything.
Everything.
Because you didn't have to use a hammer and a chisel to carve out in the 2x4 to put the outlet box in the stud. You could use them all. And I just remember it made such an impression on me how much that changed your life. I said, that's why I've invented these tools. It was amazing. So what a great feeling to be able to make your dad proud that you went the direction you went.
And you with your dad, that's an awesome story. And I think the only thing, I got my work ethic from my dad because he would get up at like 1:30 in the morning and he'd drive truck till 6 o'clock at night. And that's when we had dinner. And then he had to go to bed early because he had to do it again the next day. That and his voice, probably we sound quite a bit alike. And my brother did, my late brother sounded a lot like me. So I got my work ethic and my voice from my dad, I guess. So I love that story though. That's awesome.
Well, I tell you what led to me deciding, please, I got to get a hold of Brad Nestler. Was watching, I mean, I've been listening to you like we all have and appreciating you for all these years. But what the moment when I realized I got to get this guy, I have to talk to him, was watching the LSU-Georgia game. Joe Burrow, who's really, I can't wait to hear your thoughts about this young man. But there was a moment in the game where Gary Danielson says, oh my God, that's got to be at least 7 seconds. Look how long he's holding onto the ball. 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi. And you said something like, well, maybe it's a few more seconds if it's a Louisiana, not a Mississippi. And I remember going, that's the guy I got to talk to. Because the beautiful calmness that you have, but the ability to be that creative, it just is. It's the reason I had to get a hold of you, and it was not easy, trust me. I had to get Bob Stenner involved to be able to do this. But tell us what it's like for you after all these years to still be excited to be in the booth.
Well, I think that's the key, is to still be excited. I, you know, people ask about what my hobbies are and what my favorite things to do are and that type of thing, and you know, being with my family is great, and all of us have been with our families long enough now. Let's go back to work. No, I'm kidding. I like doing games more than anything else that I do. It's just that basic. I love what I do, and so I'm excited about it, and that's good. I think about 4 years ago, I missed about 6 weeks of the football season recovering from some surgery, and I didn't know how much I missed it until I got back. I couldn't wait to get back in the booth. And once I got back, I think I had a new appreciation for it, and it's just, like, rejuvenated me. I felt like I was, you know, in my 40s or something when I got back in the booth because I was so excited to be there. It's a different atmosphere in that I get in my own little world, not just my world. I want it to be everybody's world, and Gary and Jamie and everybody on the crew, but you do kind of get into a just a rhythm of things, and it's It's kind of hard to explain, to be honest with you, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you break it down? Do you see it? And again, maybe I'm wrong in all this, but do you see, just like as a surgeon, the different tools that I get to use? I break it down from the forceps to the clamps to the scalpel. Do you break it up as when to raise your voice, lower your voice, pace the voice, let the crowd noise in, when to tell the story? Do you think about that? You got to, but it becomes natural.
Yeah, it becomes natural, and you just kind of know when it's the right time to tell a story, when it's the right time to lay out. I've thought a lot about it recently in that how will we do it depending on what sports is going to look like if we get back to football. If there isn't a crowd, that's going to be a whole different way of doing play-by-play for a lot of us because you know, like you said, a lot of the times I just let the crowd tell the story. I might say, you know, third down and 16, and this is a ball game, and you're going to know by the reaction of the crowd. And I won't say anything. I don't have to call the play-by-play. You're watching what's happening on the screen. But if we don't have crowds and we don't have fans, I don't know what it's going to look and sound like. Actually, when the basketball tournament came around and we were just about ready to hit March Madness, we were having discussions at that point because, you know, it was a day-to-day thing. And at one point they said maybe they'd let in, you know, 100 relatives and you know, cheerleaders or whatever to a game as the conference tournaments were approaching. And, you know, I got together with the bosses and I said, hey, you know, we've got to do something if it comes to that to kind of cover us and have our sound sort of muffled in our own little area of the five-person across midcourt. Because my voice carries in an empty arena like you can't believe, and I don't want parents hearing me talk about their kids. I don't rip anybody on the air, but you know, just the thought of having parents be able to hear me kind of freaked me out. And so now if we go to an empty stadium and there's a you know, 70-yard touchdown or a 5-yard touchdown, doesn't really matter, I just kind of let the crowd tell the story, and if there's no crowd noise, you got to pick it up and keep talking, and it's going to be a whole different approach to play-by-play. So I've been thinking a lot about that lately, about how will I do it when we get back to work if it's not normal as normal used to be.
You know, I didn't think there was something in between doing a game on radio and doing a game on TV. But we're about to experience that if you got to call a game that is on TV with no crowd, right? I mean, to some extent, to you in the past, when you left Minnesota, was your first job in radio, or did you go directly to TV?
No, I was in radio a long time. So radio play-by-play is, I wouldn't even mind going back to that at some point. I love doing that because you're literally painting a picture, and you have to talk a lot more. And I think the play-by-play guy in a radio atmosphere is, quite frankly, more important than the analyst, which it's almost the opposite on TV. So,
interesting.
Yeah, I can do radio play-by-play. I did it for a long time. I did it with the Falcons first and then the Vikings, and then I moved into TV. So did that for a long time and still love that art form.
I have just so many questions there. Could you stay on for just one more segment,
sure,
Brad?
Absolutely.
I love you. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll pay some bills. We'll come back with my favorite announcer, the great Brad Nessler, joining us here on the Weekend Warriors Show on 710 ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warriors Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai on ESPN LA 710 and the ESPN app.
We're talking to the Pavarotti of sports announcing, the great Brad Nessler.
I saw the three tenors the other day singing My Way when Sinatra was still alive and he was in the audience. He looked at those three guys and just looked at them like, I don't think I'd do it that way.
But to some extent, you don't have to know Italian, and I don't know, but raising the voice, lowering your voice, spreading out the words, And then giving the storytelling. Oh, my God. I mean, it's an art. It's a craft. And it's beautiful when people can do it right. I can't play the guitar, but I know it's Eric Clapton playing. When I watch the game, you love it even more. I'm Jewish. When I heard that Sandy Koufax was Jewish, I loved him already, but I loved him even more. But when I listen to the game or watch the game and you're doing it, you love it even more. I want to ask you a question, Brad.
Yep.
So Joe Burrow, I can't help but feel, and then I listen to, you know, other games that you've done, that you have almost a love affair with certain players. And clearly you're supposed to be, you know, independent and not, but I just love that you can feel, just like the great Jim McKay did, you could somehow feel that it's personal. You really appreciate the gift, the hard work that goes into that athlete that you're talking about.
Yeah, Joe's a good example. Jake Fromm here at Georgia is another example. Just some of the games I've done in the last year. But Joe, you know, the fact that he, you know, didn't start at Ohio State, transferred to LSU. He took over that locker room when he got to LSU immediately, and in the summertime I kept hearing about this kid, and I said, well, if he can't start at Ohio State, how can he play at LSU coming into his junior year? And then we saw him progress and how that team got better and better in his junior season, and then nobody could predict that he would have done what he did, you know, last year. But I spent some time in the offseason. I went down to the Manning Passing Academy that Archie and Cooper and Eli and Peyton run every year. And Joe was there, and Joe's dad was there, and Joe's brother were there. So I spent some time with the Burrow family. I got to know his dad really well and his brother pretty well. And I got a little bit of more of an insight into Joe and how he ticks, because he's not, you know, he doesn't sit and smile at you and give you a bunch of garbage. He's just a really hard-working kid that got better and better and better. And turned himself into a Heisman Trophy winner, number one draft choice. But because I spent that time, I think, and then we did so many games, and you have time to spend with them, you know, the Friday before the game, you get a little tainted sometimes. I think same with Tua the year before. I think he spent so much time with a kid that you go, wow, he has really worked his butt off, and he's just a remarkable kid, and is having a remarkable season. And that probably seeps through when you do the game, I guess. If you don't like somebody, you know, you might be more likely to go, well, whatever. But when you like a kid like that, I suppose it shows on the air a little bit.
I once had the privilege, big-time Laker fan. I did surgery on Wilt Chamberlain. He made me a Laker fan after I did his hip surgery. And I had Gary Vee, the longtime trainer of the Lakers, on this show as a guest. And I said to him, after 30 years, Gary Vee, what's the one thing that you learned being, you know, the trainer, taking care of Magic Johnson and Kobe Bryant? And he said to me, Dr. Clapper, the one thing I've learned is talent is overrated in sports. And I said, oh, my God, what exactly does that mean? And he said, I've taken care of a lot of guys who could jump out of the gym. He said, and they've gone nowhere with their talent. It's the focus. It's the work ethic. That's what makes great players from good players. And I think that that's something that you must appreciate in your line of work as well as in the athletes like Joe Burrow. He's talented, but it's the work ethic that you, like your dad waking up at 1 o'clock in the morning to drive the truck, that somehow touches you, right?
Yeah, and, you know, everybody sort of steals from other people. I didn't create play-by-play. I mean, you talked about Jim McKay. I mean, he was unbelievable. Jack Whitaker, the way he spoke. Keith Jackson, the way Keith wrote teases. You know, I have to write teases for just about every game, and I feel like I'm getting repetitious, and I'm like, how come I can't do it like Keith? You know, some of the stuff that would come out of his mouth. Dick Enberg was a storyteller while he was doing play-by-play. Vin Scully, one of the greatest ever in any sport. A lot of people don't realize how good he was at doing football, you know, before he became just the Dodgers. And there's so many guys. And you know, over the years, I think, you know, you kind of steal a little bit here and a little bit there, and it becomes part of what you do. And you know, Pat Summerall probably, I mentioned mentioned Ray Scott earlier. Pat Summerall, I still think, is the best football announcer that has ever lived, and I just love the way he did it. You know, Jack Buck was a great storyteller, not necessarily when he was doing the games, but if you ever saw him at a banquet or a speaking engagement, I mean, the guy was unbelievable. So, you know, you take a little bit from everybody, and I think you take some from athletes, too. You mentioned work ethic. You know, Kobe Bryant was one of the most talented players ever, but it was his work ethic that I think made him one of the greatest ever. And so you got to kind of mix it all together. Yeah, you can run the 40 in 4.38, but if you can't catch the ball or you don't work hard at it, you're just a fast guy.
You know, they say Keith Jackson used to scribble on pieces of paper little vignettes, and he'd stuff them in his pocket, and so that he had the confidence. He wasn't nervous when he did a game, that if there was any downtime, that he could pull something out. And do you have any tricks like that, or are you just the notes that you take, the fill in the gap time? What's your process like?
I don't do the note thing at all. I mean, we have all our board and all our materials out in front of us, and that's what you study all week. You know, I always tell my daughter I study 6 days to take a test on Saturday, you know. So
yeah, exactly.
It's an all-week process. But I will tell you that some of my better things have been written on bar napkins. So that gives you an idea. You know, maybe on a Friday night I have a thought and I go, that might be good for the tees tomorrow, so it ends up on a bar napkin. So in Keith's, that a little bit like Keith in that respect, I guess.
How about drinking tea? How do you take care of your voice?
Yeah, I do drink tea when it gets cold, and that helps sometime. I'm a water guy. I have one Diet Coke about 2 hours before the game, and I have one 5-hour energy about an hour and a half before the game, and then I just water it and can't wait till halftime so I can get to the men's room.
Exactly. You got to think about all of those things. Absolutely.
I never drink milk. Well, you don't ever drink milk if you want to do a game. That's not going to work for you because that gets clogged back there and the voice doesn't sound the way it's supposed to.
Wow. Brad Nessler, you know, Steve Jobs was great because he saw the connection between art and science. And that's basically what I appreciate in what you're doing. You're a Renaissance man in the sense that you recognize the art in the player and in the craft that you have, in addition to the technical aspects of the sport. And that's why when people say, well, Vin Scully never played, Jim McKay never played the game, Kurt Gowdy never played the game, Pat Summerall did,
yeah.
But that's why you have the clout to be able to be the announcer. The color guy's great, but you bring that art and science. Do you feel that you're doing that when you're announcing the game?
Sometimes I don't realize what I said until somebody brings it up to me after the game, to be honest with you, Robbie. I've had friends say, you know, great line, and I go, what are you talking about? I mean, it just sometimes it comes out and you don't realize, like you replayed that Florida ending of that Florida game, which I have heard more than once, and I got some grief about it because some people thought I was trying to make a religious statement on the last call by
the Hail Mary.
My next line was full of grace, and I didn't plan that. It just was the next line of a prayer when I grew up as a kid, so that came out. And so kind of didn't know I said that until my daughter told me when I got home that day or that hit Twitter or something. So sometimes you don't know what's coming out until you say it. But anyway, I appreciate you thinking that highly of me. I can't wait to go upstairs and tell my wife that I got so many compliments from one person, and I'm hoping that she'll give me one sometime during the day.
You know, I have a daughter as well, and it's so great to have those pair of ears listening to everything that you do, and you get in the car, and let me tell you, the one person I take advice from is my daughter. And,
yeah.
I think it sounds like you're the same way.
She runs, I very seldom have anything on Twitter or whatever, and if there is something, she puts it on there because I don't even know how to do it, but I do have, I guess. So she, once in a while, I'll send something to her, and she'll go, Dad, I think I'm going to put that. I go, do whatever you have to do. I got to tell you one more story. You probably have to go to a commercial. I'm going to tell you one story about Pat Summerall. So I'm about a 12-year-old kid, and I'm at a Viking-Bears game, and it was in December, sometimes when they had Saturday games in December, and it was about 5 degrees below zero without the wind chill.
Wow.
My dad and two of the guys that worked for him, And we go to the game, and it's so cold. And every time Dick Butkus ran into Bill Brown or Dave Osborne, you could hear it in the third deck, which is where we were sitting in some
Wow.
So I go to the concession stand at halftime, of the souvenir stand, and there's Pat Summerall. And he's buying stocking caps for he and Tom Brookshire because they're freezing to death in the booth at the old Met Stadium. I walk up and I go, Mr. Summerall, my name's Brad Nessler, and I'm going to take your job someday. And Pat looked at me and he said, good luck with that kid. When I make it to CBS for the first time in 1990, we have an NFL seminar, and we have a party, and we've all got our blazers on, and we're doing promos and everything, and so everybody has a couple cocktails, and I walk up to Pat. I introduce myself. I said, Pat, do you remember a little chubby kid back, 18, 19 years ago that came up to you at Met Stadium and said, I'm going to take your job? And he kind of looks at me and says, was that you? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, you're getting closer, kid. So.
That's fantastic. Oh, man. You know what? It's a crazy world we live in right now, and our job is to really make it just a little bit better. Brad Nessler, you made a lot of people's world a little bit better this morning by sharing all those stories. And what a pleasure to be able to meet you this way on the radio. You've got an orthopedic surgeon in your family now for the rest of your life.
Good.
I really appreciate it.
Just about every joint I have hurts, so I'll get
What a pleasure, and have a blessed day. It was really great to talk to you.
Thanks, Doc. I'll talk to you soon, man.
Okay, can't wait. The great Brad Nessler. Man, this is one of my favorite guests of all time. Thanks so much for allowing me to have this show so that I can have this kind of pleasure on a Saturday morning. Coming up next, I'll take your calls. The number is 877-710-ESPN. And I got to tell you about a chocolate that I discovered that I went and got. My wife wants to shoot me. I bought so many from Trader Joe's. And I'll tell you which one. Coming up next here on the Weekend Warriors Show on 710-ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedar Sinai on ESPN LA 710 and the ESPN app.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. I suppose you don't want me to just hear me singing Frank Sinatra all day, but the key to Frank Sinatra, my father's favorite singer, was his phrasing, emphasizing the different syllables in each word and using his voice as an instrument. And it is exactly the same story for Pavarotti, for Jim McKay, and for Brad Nessler. They know how to use the voice, their voice, as an instrument. And you think, well, okay, they're singers. He's a sports announcer. I'm on the radio. I'm using a voice. But I got news for you. As a surgeon meeting patients, for these last 7 weeks, I've only been seeing patients virtually with a laptop, and I've been busy. You know, you call my office, you get an appointment, you'll be having me in your living room because I'll be there on the screen. But it's how you use your voice. And I learned a lot of this from Dr. Curlin, from Curlin Job when he was still alive. I was his fellow. And I particularly did a project that he enjoyed, which was injuries to the jockeys, which I knew was his favorite sport, which was horse racing. It wasn't the Rams. It wasn't the Lakers. It wasn't the Kings. Everybody thought that's what it was, but it wasn't. The Dodgers as well. Yes, he loved sports medicine, and he loved being an orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Curlin did. But it was those jockeys, and I spent a lot of time with him at Hollywood Park. How you raise your voice, lower your voice, spread it out, highlight what you're saying. And in the sense of Vin Scully letting the crowd noise in, You must pause. You can't just come at a patient with information. Most doctors don't even know the difference between a ligament and a tendon, let alone a patient. And that's where Clapper Vision comes from. I can use my voice as an instrument, as a tool to explain things. Let's take a call. The clinic's open. The number's 877-710-ESPN. Let's go to Connor. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Good morning, doctor. How are you?
Connor, I don't take drugs, but let me tell you something. I am high right now. You know why I'm high? Because I got to talk to Brad Nessler, one of my heroes, one of my favorite announcers, and I cannot believe I got to be able to talk to the guy. It's just, you make a list. Who are the top 10 people who are currently living that you'd want to have dinner with, that you want to have a conversation with, whether it's Jerry Seinfeld? For me, it's Brad Nessler, and I can't believe I just had a conversation with him. I'm just so happy. So that's how I'm doing.
I'm very excited for you. Hopefully you could be my hero.
Okay, I hopefully can. What do you do for a living, Connor?
So I actually work in solar.
Oh, nice.
I do surveys, and I design solar systems for residential buildings.
What does designing them mean? Like, you have to figure out where on the roof to put the solar panel, how many panels, the angle that it has to be for the sun. Is that what you do?
More or less, yeah. They'll give me kind of a rough draft of where they want to place the panels, and then basically I'll go out there and measure and make sure that the rough draft can be implemented into the final draft.
Wow, what an interesting thing to do for a living. That's fantastic. Yeah. How old are you, and where'd you grow up? Talk to me.
I am 32 years old, and I grew up in Costa Mesa, California.
Do you surf?
I surf every day.
We got something sometimes. In Connor. Connor, we have something in common.
Exactly. That's why I'm calling. I basically have been out of the water for a couple of months, which, as you know, from one surfer to the next, it's pretty dreadful.
Well, I've been cheating because I've been going to my spot in Ventura, and I got some of the best rides I've ever had in my life this past Wednesday, but I don't want to rub it in.
Oh, man, I can only imagine. Yeah, I've been basically on the IR, and I kind of got an MRI, and the MRI came back, and it said...
Do you have it in front of you, Connor?
I have what the... So my good family friend is a hip specialist at the University of Utah, and I sent her the MRI images, and she basically gave me the diagnosis through an email. And she said that your right hip shows some obvious signs of wear and tear, cyst in the, if I'm pronouncing this right, the acetabulum.
Acetabulum. That's the socket of the ball and socket joint. Wow. You're way too young for this. Although this week I saw a young woman, 33 years old, who I'm going to have to do hip surgery on because of her congenital damage in her hip. And now she's a mom of three. She's been on that hip 30 plus years. And it's going to need to have new cartilage. You don't have just the linoleum having an issue. You got termites in the floorboards. So this is what we're going to do, Connor. There's a book that I wrote with Linda Huey called Heal Your Hips. I need you to read that book. It'll teach you about the anatomy. It'll educate you just like you educate your clients about solar. I'm about to educate you about what's involved with the hip. What's the difference between the acetabulum, the femoral head, the labrum, the psoas tendon, articular cartilage, the synovial fluid? You're going to get an education in what the parts are all about, just like you do in your business. And this is what I want to do with you, Connor. I need you to read the book, and we can't get to a swimming pool now, and you're a surfer. You know what it's like. And that's what the book is about in terms of exercises you can do. But I want to know more detail than an email from a family friend, which I appreciate, by the way. Next Saturday, I'm going to be on with Rebecca and Steve Paulette helping me and Jared Abrams as well. I want you to have in front of you the MRI report, and you're going to have that page in front of you, and you're going to read from where it says impression, and I'm going to translate with Clapper Vision exactly what's going on in your hip and what to do. In the meantime, don't let them stick a needle in your hip. No cortisone, no stem cells, no Synvisc. You and I are going to talk about what to do with your hip, and we're going to feature it next week. You're going to call in at 7:15 or 7:30, and we're going to take it from there. All right, Connor? I promise you the time that you deserve.
All right, I'm so excited.
All right?
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Connor. Get the book and
get
the MRI ready.
All right. Thank you.
All right. God bless you, Connor. Weekend Warriors coming up next. I'm going to tell some stories about how to use your voice as an instrument. I cannot wait to teach you about Pavarotti, about Jim McKay. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show here on 710 ESPN.